All set.
Okay, thank you. How's Corey? Good?
Cheers.
This is my post-Kimball.
Okay, good evening, everybody. Nice to see you. Erev Tov.
Thank you.
And hope everybody had a beautiful and Freilich Purim.
Yes, we did.
Great.
You too.
We did, Baruch Hashem. Very, very joyous and exuberant. Okay, it's an understatement. Although the cover sheet says Nesivos Shalom, the truth is that tonight we are learning a mimer from this sefer called the Malchus Shlomo. And next week, which I believe is the last shiur, we will be learning from Nesivos Shalom. And this is a very special sefer to me. I want to tell you why. This is the Torah of my Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rabbi Shlomo Twersky, who I talked about a little bit the night I spoke about the Baal Shem Tov. Mm-hmm. And I'll give a little bit of a history there of our relationship. Rabbi Twersky was a Rav and a Rebbe in Denver for all my years growing up. My father, Zichrono Livracha, was a rabbi in Denver for many, many years, and he and Rabbi Twersky were very, very close, and therefore our families were close growing up. All the kids kind of grew up together. And Rabbi Twersky, as that Saul, came to Denver in 1946 or 47. My father and mother came in 1951. And over the next 40 years, they were extremely close. Rabbi Twersky was a Hornestipler Rebbe, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that lineage in Hasidus. Now, of course, the name Twersky is very well known and famous. The Twersky family are all of Chernobyl. The name of the Hasidus that the Twerskys are associated with is Chernobyl. Chernobyl was in Ukraine, and the first Chernobyl Rebbe was named Rav Menachem Nachum Twersky. His sefer is called the Me'orei Na'im. It's a very fundamental and classic sefer Hasidus. The Me'orei Na'im was a Talmud of both the Baal Shem Tov and after him the Maggid of Mezerich. So he is the forerunner of all of the Twersky Chernobyl Hasidus. He lived approximately 250 years ago. And from that line of Chernobyl, a huge Hasidus eventually developed. Part of the reason for that is this, that the Me'orei Na'im's son was the Chernobyler Maggid, Ramatul of Chernobyl. The Chernobyler Maggid was a great Rebbe and had thousands of Hasidim. And in addition to that, he had eight sons. And each one of his eight sons became a Rebbe. Mm-hmm. So they were all tzaddikim, kedoshim, great holy people. He had three sons from his first wife, and she passed away. And then he had another five sons from his second wife. They all became Rebbes, and they spread out in Ukraine. And each one had a very, vibrant Hasidic court, a hoif, and the Hasidus therefore became something very significant in that part of Eastern Europe. Some of the families of that lineage you'd recognize, for example, Skver, the Skver Hasidim, there's New Square in New York. So Skver is a branch of Chernobyl. The Skver Rebbe is Artursky. Rachma Strifka is another very well-known Hasidus. Now there's a Rachma Strifka Rebbe in Yerushalayim, and there's another one who's his uncle in Borough Park. There are also Twerskys. Trisk is a line of Chernobyl. Makarev is another line, Koreshev. So there's quite a few, and over the next several generations, one of the lines that came through was Hornestipel. So I'll just tell you briefly how that worked. The Me'orei Na'im, as I said, was the first Rebbe. His son was Ramatul, the Chernobyler Maggid. He had 8 sons. His third son was Rabbi Yaakov Yisroel of Chikas. And I have a son named Yaakov Yisroel. It became a very commonly used name amongst those Hasidim. Okay, so Maori Naim, Chernobyl or Maga, then her son, his third son was Rabbi Yaakov Yisroel of Chikas. He had a daughter named Shterna. Right? His daughter, Shterna, had a son named Rav Mordechai Dov. Rav Mordechai Dov was the Horna Stipler Rebbe. Okay, he lived in the late 1800s, mid to late 1800s, and passed away in 1903. That was my Rebbe's great-grandfather. So from Rav Mordechai Dov, I went to Rav Leibele. From Leibele to Rav Yaakov Yisroel, another Yaakov Yisroel. He is also known as the Milwaukee Rebbe. You probably heard of that name before. Mm-hmm. The Milwaukee Rebbe had 5 sons, he and his Rebbetzin, who I knew. And the oldest of their 5 sons was my Rebbe, Rabbi Shlomo Twersky. And then the second one was Rav Motel, who's also since passed away. The third son is Rabbi Abraham Twersky, the famous psychiatrist and author who's written a zillion books, right? And it was a brilliant, brilliant person and just a phenomenal person as well. Mm-hmm. Then the two youngest brothers are twins. That's Rabbi Michal Twersky in Milwaukee, and who's also a Horna Stipler Rebbe. And his twin is Rabbi Aaron Twersky, who's a professor of law in New York. They're all full Hasidische garb, levush, and everything, but very involved also in the world at large. So the Milwaukee Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov Yisroel Twersky, and his Rebbetzin had 5 sons. The oldest of the 5 was my Rebbe, Rabbi Shlomo Twersky, the youngest, Rabbi Michal Twersky in Milwaukee. So that's the lineage of Horna Stipel. They're called the Horna Stipler Rebbes. That goes Horna Stipel, Chikas, Chernobyl. It's all part of the main Hasidus of Chernobyl. I'm not going to test you on this, don't worry. Mm-hmm. But if you want to, you know, get a little more information about, I'll be happy to fill you in. Yeah, Lev Avram, please.
I just had a quick question.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It may not be relevant, but you said that your Rav Twersky came down from his great grandmother, who I assume lost the name Twersky when she got married. So how did that name come back to his?
Great. Let me tell you how that happened. You're right on the mark. Mm-hmm. Okay, so really, based on what Lev Avram is saying, when Shterna, who was a Twersky, got married to Rav Meshulam Mezusha, who was a descendant of the Rebbe of Mezusha, so the name Twersky should have been switched to her married name, which was Auerbach. But it didn't, because their son, Rav Mordechai Dov, was raised by his grandparents. And therefore, he took his grandfather's name, Rabbi Yaakov Yisroel of Chikas, which was Twersky.
Okay.
And that's why the Twersky name continued.
So he was born as a child, raised by his grandfather.
I forgot if his parents passed away when they were young, that's one possibility. Or they had to go away. I forgot this story, but he ended up being raised by his grandfather, who was a Twersky, and therefore the name Twersky continued on.
Shterna's father.
Yes, exactly. Okay, Shterna means star. It's like the Hebrew word kochav. Shterna is the Yiddish word for star. Okay.
So just again.
Yes.
Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael of
Chikas.
Chikas.
Chikas. Right. Chikas. That's also in Ukraine, one of those towns.
So Chikas, where comes Shterna?
His daughter was Shterna.
Oh, Shterna.
Yeah, was his daughter. And then their son was Rav Mordechai Dov, who was the first Horna Stipler Rebbe. And then that went on several Doros, and still we have Horna Stipler Rebbes as well. So right now there are 3, because Rabbi Michal Twersky in Milwaukee is a Horna Stipler Rebbe. My Rebbe's son, who lives in New York, Rabbi Mati Twersky, he's also Horna Stipler Rebbe, and he was featured a few weeks ago on Mishpacha magazine, a very beautiful article. And then also his son-in-law, Rabbi Shalom Shachna Friedman, who's also a Horna Stipler Rebbe in Yerushalayim. So now there are 3. It happens in the Hasidic circles, right? Each one kind of develops their own following. Rav Michal is the oldest of those because he's still from the previous generation. Now, a little bit about my Rebbe. I told you about Simchas Torah with him a few weeks ago and that very striking and beautiful experience when he used to dance on Simchas Torah. He was a Rav in a shul in Denver for about 30 years, maybe 35 years even. And then he went and he made a shtiebel in his home, a Beis Midrash in his home. And it was there that he started something new. And he and his wife, they opened up their house, literally. They opened up their house to all who wanted to come. And I was amongst those who came. I was not raised Hasidish. My father was a religious Zionist rabbi, centrist orthodoxy, very similar to this shul in certain ways. And that's how I grew up. And then I gravitated towards Hasidus as I became closer to Rabbi Twersky. And as I mentioned, he was very close with my father. They were very close friends. His house was completely open. You could come in any time of the day or night. He opened up his life to people, and I mean that literally. You could come in and he'd be in the kitchen doing something. You could have a talk with him in the kitchen while he was making his coffee. Or you could be in the Beis Midrash and learning with him, or you might go out and do something with him. Certainly their Shabbos table was open completely. There were 30, 40 people there often on Shabbos. On Yom Tovim, there were often 60 or 70 people at the Yom Tov table. It was just a completely open house. And for those few years where I spent intensive amounts of time learning with him, is those 2 years were really the most instrumental in terms of my coming into my own derech of Hasidus, my own path in Hasidus. He spoke a lot of Torah at his table. Friday night, Shabbos lunch, and Shalosh Shudos, he spoke, you know, about all types of relevant topics, applying the ideas of Hasidus to modern life. He's extremely articulate and excellent speaker. And he had a very interesting combination of qualities. He was at the same time a very warm, accepting, non-judgmental person, and he was also a very challenging person. He was at the same time both. So you could feel accepted, and you could feel loved, and you could also feel like, I better do something with my life, right? You know, all in one. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, really just knew a yam, an ocean of Torah. He was a great posek. He really was the posek of our city, of Denver. When I was growing up, he was a posek ha'ir, and people from the whole region used to turn toward him with shilas. And his scope of knowledge was awesome. And he had a knack for being able to relate to the contemporary American Jew. A lot of people came his way, you know, searching for meaning in their life and for Yiddishkeit, a deeper Yiddishkeit in their life, and he affected so many, many people. My wife and I were married by Rabbi Twersky, and that was in 1981. And then a few months later, he passed away on Simchas Torah of that very, very same year. So we have a very special place for him in our heart and in our lives. And his whole approach to life and to Hasidus was one that we very much try to emulate. But as he would often say, he doesn't want anybody to imitate him, but he wants you to find your own way within the teachings that he gave. He did not like people trying to, in a certain way, you know, copy what he was doing. He thought that that completely defeated the purpose of what it means to really learn and teach. So he would teach, and he would give over his lessons, and then he would want us to apply it to our own lives in our own ways. He once said that what he likes to do with people is likes to step in and help, then he likes to step out. Do not want to create dependencies that are not healthy. I'll tell you one very nice story of many. He had long payas, and he wore his payas up, you know, tied up here. I saw a picture of him when he was younger, when he was a boy, and he had short payas, like to a little bit past the bottom of his ear. So I said, Rabbi Twersky, I see when you were young that your payas were short, and at some point in your life you grew them out. So he said, yes, when we were young, my father didn't want us to have long payas. He wanted us to have payas still here. So I said, when did you grow your payas long? He said, when I was 16. I said, what happened? He said, I rebelled. It's a good kind of rebellion, yeah?
Yes.
So, great sense of humor as well. Okay, so one very important story that illustrates also a little bit of his derech. I was either 18 or 19 years old. I came to him with a certain problem I was having, and I discussed it with him, and he discussed it a little bit with me. And then I was kind of waiting for him to respond. And then he said, Menachem, a decision is the loneliest place in the world. Mm-hmm. And he walked away. Mm-hmm. Not walked away in a rude way, just we were done. Mm-hmm. He walked away. Decision's yours. That was very, very much how he was. He felt that a person had to make choices in life. Obviously, if he had a shaila and things, a shaila had to be answered, of course.
Sure.
We're talking about a personal thing that we're working on in life. You could choose this, you could choose that, you could choose this. He'd help lay out the options, and then you had to choose. So I very much believed in people being responsible for the choices that we have in life. Please, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, from what we hear from Hasidim, mm-hmm. The Hasidic rabbis in general, we have the image that many went to him to ask for an answer to their questions. So what you're describing is kind of at odds with the stereotype that we know. What's the most prevalent, I mean, among the Hasidic Rebbe that there was, I mean, many of them, was he exceptional in this, or was it more the common way of the Hasidic?
It is a little bit of a stereotype that they would just say what a person should do. Mm. Although there is a lot of truth to that, and that was often the case. But it really did depend on the Rebbe and on his own particular derech and his way with people. So what he did was not unique, you know, but it was more the exception than it was the rule. Yeah. Okay, now we're going to hear a little bit of this in the mimer that we learned tonight. Now, this sefer was written about 6-7 years ago. My Rebbe did not write this sefer. He spoke a lot, but he didn't write. This was compiled by his grandson, Rabbi Yaakov Yisroel Nissan. And he compiled the sefer with a lot of notes and tapes and did a beautiful job with it. Isa b'Gemora Brachos Chafches. It says in the Gemora Brachos, Kishachola Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the Nasi of the Sanhedrin in his time, when he became sick, Nichnesu Tamidav Levakro, his students came to visit him. Kevan Shira'a Osan, when he saw them, Hischil Livkos, he began to cry. Amrulo, they said to him, Mipnei Ma Ata Bocha, Rebbe, why are you crying? Amar Lahu, he said to them, Ilu Lifnei Melech Basar Vadam Hayu Malichin Osi Bechule, etc. If they were to bring me before a king of flesh and blood, I would certainly be afraid. All the more so am I afraid when they're bringing me before the King of Kings. That was his first answer. The second answer is the topic of this discussion. V'lo od, but not only that, Ella. Sheyesh lefanai beis derachem. There are two pathways before me. Echad shel gan Eden, Ve'echad shel Gehenim. One of them goes to the Garden of Eden, the other one goes to Gehenim. Ve'eini yodeya be'ezem molichi nosi. I do not know on which path they're going to guide me. Ve'lo efkeh, and I shouldn't cry. Ad kan l'shono, end quote. So let me ask you a quick question. What's so unusual about this, about his answer?
Yeah, why would he believe that he was going to go? He, Yochanan ben Zakkai,
right.
Would he believe that he wasn't going to go?
Right, who are we talking about?
Yeah.
Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. He was a great tzaddik. You know, he allowed for the continuation of Yiddishkeit and Torah after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. It was a great, great man. Ulechora eina muva, that's the question that he asks. Eich lo yada Rabban Yochanan im hu holeich legan Eden ol Gehenna. How could it be? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had a question. He doesn't know which way he's going after the life that he led. Halo bevada yada, certainly he knew, shakol shenosav hayu bikedusha b'tahara, that his whole lifetime was spent in holiness and purity. Be'esek HaTorah, with involvement in Torah, v'hamitzvah, suma hoyas feiko, what was his doubt? What was his question about which way he was going? So that's his question. Just before I get to you, I want to go a little weiter into it. Avolo inyan hu. So let's see, open this up a little bit, key. This has a few steps to it. HaTorah hu hakli. Torah is the vessel. She'al yado yochol limso Hashem yisporach, through which we can find Hashem. It is the means through which we can find God. Avol imhu eino mevakesh, but if a person is not seeking, az lo yimso klum, they will not find anything. Va'afal pi shehu shomer kol ha-Torah kula, even though he may be keeping all of the Torah and keeping the mitzvot, but if he's not seeking God while he's going through the observances, he's not going to find anything. Right? Mechanical Judaism. You do it, but you're not looking for anything. It says, Bihim Mavakesh. Here's that note of challenge I was talking to you about. A Mavakesh. It's not enough to keep the mitzvos. It's not enough to look for God. Vahu kamo kol kelim. The Torah is like all tools, like all vessels. Afal pi sheyesh lo hakli biyado, even though you have the tool, the kli in your hand, im eino mishtamesh bo, if you don't use it, hare lo mo'ol klum, it's not going to help at all. So we have the Torah, we're walking around with the Torah, what are we doing with it? If we're not a mevakesh, if we're not a true seeker of Hashem, we're walking around with the kli, but we're not going to find anything. Right, so that's on one hand. Avol, however, b'li ha-Torah, without the Torah, b'vadai lo yimso Hashem yisparach. Most certainly we will not find Hashem without the Torah. Ki ha-Torah hu ha-kli shenasal lanu Hashem yisparach ba'atzmo. It is the means, it is the vessel that Hashem gave us himself. Kedei lahagia elav yisparach, to reach a relationship with him. Hashem said, you want to be in a relationship with me? Here's the Torah. This is how it's done. Vim eino lokeach hakli biyado, and if we don't take hold of the kli of the Torah, af im mevakesh Hashem yisborach kol yamav, even though one is seeking God for their whole life, lo yimso klum, they won't find a thing. So it's not enough to have the Torah and not seek. It's not enough to seek and not have the Torah. They have to have both. Have the Torah and be a mevakesh, be one who seeks. Those are the first two steps of the Maamar. Lev Avraham, you had a comment before?
I was just going to say that
Please. Perhaps
he was trying to teach his Talmidim that a person can never be too sure of themselves. That even though he was a great man mm-hmm. and they knew he was a great man, mm-hmm. he still had his own doubts just to show that he was still a humble person. And that in his own heart, it could have gone either way.
Excellent. I think it's a very good lesson as well. Very good lesson. Vehine, haderech el Hashem. When a person is on the way toward Hashem, they're on a path to God. Mishtana lefi ha'adam u lefi ha'es. It changes according to the person and according to the time we live in. In other words, the Torah is eternal. The Torah applies in all times. It applies to every Jew. But the way a particular Jew lives out the Torah, and a particular Jew in a certain time lives out the Torah, that's the challenge. V'alkein imishtamish b'Torah kura'ui. Therefore, if a person lives Torah properly, az avodaso lo yihiya mamish shaveh la'avodas shum adam acher. Their avodas Hashem will never be the same as anybody else's. There's something unique and different about each individual's form of avodas Hashem. And that touches on what I mentioned to you earlier about no imitations, right? Mm-hmm. No. Role models, teachers, rabbis, rebbetzins, yes, all those good things, and then you have to make it your own. It needs a lot of guidance and hadracha. But ultimately, that's what we are striving to do. Ki harehu miyuchad lo, because the Torah is special for each and every person. V'harbe b'nei adam, many people, einam mishtamshim b'Torah, they only involve themselves with Torah, ela lihiyos mahalech hachayim shelahem, for it to be a lifestyle. A lifestyle. Ve'einam mevakshim Hashem, but they're not seeking God. Ve'einam magi'im lo yisporach, and therefore they don't reach a relationship with Him. This is a very challenging and a critical statement that he made. The idea that a person can be living the life, but can be somewhat empty of its meaning. So we're part of the lifestyle, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, we're raising our kids in this way. It's a lifestyle. But where is its impact? Where is its real meaning? Are we really changing and growing as people? Right, and that's a challenging statement. Nimsa, therefore we find. She'im echad hu mavakesh, that if a person is a seeking person, afal pi sheshomer kol ha-Torah, even though he's keeping Torah fully, Tamid yihya biyados fekos. He's always going to have questions. Im hu bederach hanochon. Am I really on the right path? Am I living Torah the way Hashem wants me to live it? Lahagia el beis el, to reach, there's an expression, a relationship with God. Ve'im zu hasulam sherosho magia hashamayma. Is this the ladder of Yaakov Avinu's dream, his prophecy, that reached all the way up to heaven? Am I really on that ladder? V'alkein, therefore, afilu hatana ho'eloki, even this godly person, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, shebevadai lo hoya biyodo shum avera kal shebekal, who most certainly was not doing any averos. He was a tzaddik gomer. No averos, no transgressions. V'asak b'avodoso yisborach kol yomav, and he always involved himself with service of Hashem, Torah, mitzvos, maisim tovim. Bacha, he cried, because that was his question. D'lo yoda, im hishtamesh kura'ui b'Torah, did I use the Torah properly? Did I live the Torah properly? So was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai keeping mitzvos? Of course, absolutely. Had he gotten to the point in his life where he wasn't doing any averos? Yes, absolutely. But still he was challenging himself, did I live the Torah the way Hashem wanted it to be funneled through my own particular personality? Lahagia el yedias habore yisporach, to reach a true knowledge of God, kefi ma shahaya biyado la'asos, according to his abilities and to his potential. So that's his understanding, a very important life lesson of this Gemara, this very famous Gemara with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So let me ask you a question or two. First of all, what do you think he means when he says that without the Torah, a person cannot find God? What do you think he means by that?
Was it I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm just thinking
yeah,
about the
please.
Last class. Or
yeah.
Was it?
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, I can't remember if it was
it's all right.
Or wait.
Yeah.
But you said there
yeah.
was something in the Torah,
mm-hmm.
the formation of the Torah, and something the formation of the sechel of the human being.
Yes.
There is some sort
of a parallel.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they're made to be connected or something like that.
Yes.
I'm so sorry if I'm
disturbing. Well, you're sorry.
Okay.
You're doing
yeah.
great.
Okay.
That's
so,
from that's from the Ramchal.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So I know that we can, if I understand you
yeah.
correctly, that we will not be able to unlock that our own potential, which is parallel to the Torah,
mm-hmm.
without the Torah. Right? That's
right.
the key to unlocking
right.
the Jewish
right.
personality.
Right? Right.
That's absolutely correct.
Right.
We can't unlock our relationship with Hashem. The Torah lives within every Jew. So to try and do it without it, I'm leaving part of myself out. The Torah part of myself, it's leaving it out. The Torah that applies to me.
What happens with the non-Jew? I mean, they can converse, I mean, they can connect to Hashem, and they don't have the Torah.
Right, they connect in a different way. They don't connect through the 613 mitzvahs of Torah. They connect through the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, the seven Noahai laws, by being moral people, ethical people, believing people, good people. That's their relationship to God.
Right, but the Torah is not only the 613 mitzvot. The Torah is much more than that.
Well, please, explain.
Something?
Explain what you mean, please.
I think the mitzvot are just one part of it. Whether they englobe everything,
mm-hmm.
I can't speak, but it seems to me that there's more than just the mitzvot.
You're talking about the stories of the Torah, you mean?
No, I mean, there's philosophy, there is, you know, relating Ben Adam and Chaverot,
mm-hmm.
there's...
Mm-hmm.
This is what you said, Rabbi.
Go ahead.
The Ma'amar is saying, which is, it's not just the mitzvot without generating a certain experience is kind of not
right.
quite there.
That's right.
Yes.
Right.
But some chavaya that you're seeking.
An experience with HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
Mm-hmm.
As a Jew?
Yeah, but I guess what
mm-hmm.
you're saying is just the mechanics of a mitzvah is not necessary but not sufficient.
That's why
right.
That's why
that's
I was saying.
That's
yeah.
correct.
That's why I was saying the Torah
mm-hmm.
cannot be only the 600.
Which is what
sure.
you said yourself
mm-hmm.
not
mm-hmm.
long ago in
mm-hmm.
here, that you can be a Jew and practice the mitzvot. It's not enough you don't seek God.
Yeah.
And so it's so much more than the mitzvot, as
but
she was saying.
The way I see
mm-hmm.
it is that through the text, by studying it, I mean, the Torah is essentially, it's a book. It's a mean, it's a kli, like you said. It's a mean through which you can connect. So you connect by making the mitzvot, by studying, by contemplating.
You see, those are all uniquely Jewish things.
Yeah.
Well, I want to tell you
no,
why.
So what I'm saying
yeah.
is we have the Torah,
yeah.
we have that text,
yeah.
we have this, but the non-Jews don't have the text of the Torah. We say that
well,
just
they,
reading it, it transforms us.
Well, they
right.
do, but let me tell you the key difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's Torah Shebichtav
right.
and Torah Shebaal Peh.
Right.
Right? So the oral Torah, which for us is the key
right.
to the written Torah, that's a uniquely Jewish experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about the 613 mitzvot, although that's a big part of it, because that does not apply to non-Jewish people,
right.
Taryag mitzvot. But not only that, the way in which we relate to Torah in total is through Torah Sheba'al Peh, through the oral Torah.
Mm-hmm.
That is a uniquely Jewish thing.
Mm.
Right.
That's not a non-Jewish experience. They have what they call the Bible. They have that. It's the translation of what we call the Torah. But they don't have Torah Sheba'al Peh, nor are they meant to have it. That experience is meant for Jewish people. Pam, yeah, please.
Is this Ma'amar's mm-hmm. intention to reflect something from the Shema, which is simply, if your heart isn't in it, you're not going to get anything out of it. And like the whole of Avachah B'chol Nafshecha, like just, that's my understanding.
It's that, and it's also the other side of it, that it's not enough to have the heart. Because the structure of the mitzvahs, the kli itself.
Very behavioristic.
Right.
Right, you have to do a ritual.
Right. Seek it and do it at the same time.
And internalize.
Internalize it and apply it to ourselves as individuals.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
What does the levitation mean?
I think it means this, that it's that famous story of the Kotzker Rebbe. The Kotzker Rebbe is in his town and he sees a young man going by and he stops him. He says, Yingerman, young man, where is God? So he says to the Kotzker, God is everywhere. So he said, Yingerman, you know, where is God? He said, well, the Torah says, Melo chol ha'aretz kevado, the whole world is filled with his glory. And the Kotzker says, where is God? The young man realizes he's not getting it. So he says, okay, Rebbe, where is God? And he said, wherever you let him in. Wherever you let him in, that's where God is. And I think that really is what he is speaking about. You know, there's the action of the mitzvah, the halacha, which we have to follow. And then there is that God awareness, which may or may not be present when we're doing a mitzvah. We have to choose to make that God awareness, that consciousness of our Kodesh Baruch Hu, da'as, in the Lashon of the Nesiva Shalom, da'as, aware of God and what we're doing, and to be open to letting that affect me in whichever way that it does. You know, it's not impossible that a person can go through all of davening and not think about God. It seems like a great contradiction, right? We're addressing God all the time in davening. His name is mentioned so many times in the Siddur. But we can have an experience of tefillah and we're done. And we look back at it, we say to ourselves, I'm not really sure if I ever thought about it, God. I read the words, but was I aware of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, mamish lefanai, right in front of me? No, sometimes we're not.
So how do you make that happen?
I think we have to initiate, that we have to take that moment right before we do a mitzvah, or right before we daven, or whatever it is that we're doing. Literally just take a few seconds, mamish 5 seconds, and think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu right before we do that act. Now the earlier Hasidim HaRishonim in the time of the Mishnah, they contemplated an hour before they davened, and then they davened at Moreh Bracha. So we can't do that. We're simply not up to that. 5 seconds we can do. 5 seconds we could think about who we're addressing, who we're standing in front of before we do a mitzvah. And I think it would be a very transformational experience for us if we would take those few seconds and think about it. That's why a lot of the Hasidim in earlier years adopted the L'shem Yichud Kudsha Berichu before doing a mitzvah, to develop that awareness for the sake of the unification of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shekhinah, Klal Yisrael. However, what happened with that after a while? That also became mechanical, right?
Right.
The Shem Yichud Kudsha Baruch Hu became just as mechanical as what they were about to do. But that was its purpose. Its purpose was for a person to think about what was happening in that mitzvah right before they did it. And that's the goal, to think about that in this context. That's the objective. So, Neil, when you ask how can we do that, we have to make that choice to give it a little thought right before we do something of that nature.
I mean, one way that I think it could be done more easily is if the service was not so long and you could spend more time on each part.
Yeah.
And the fact of making such a big service, and you have to do, you know, you have so much little time to do it. if you would say, you know, we have to spend 5 minutes on these 10 lines, and people look into the translation and repeat and try to understand, I think that's, for me personally, I'd rather have less. But of course, I'm a woman, so I'm not in the
same. I was going to say, you have the freedom to do that.
I can do that. That's what
I don't.
But
you do. I don't.
Right.
Yeah,
I know,
literally. But that's
right.
Okay with me.
No, but I'm saying that when the Chachamim instituted the prayer, and each time they add more and add more,
Yeah. Were
they thinking of this? And
they were thinking of everything. They were thinking of everything we could possibly think of, and much, much more. Much, much more. We are living in an age where concentration is difficult. Mm-hmm. People have a hard time sitting for an hour, certainly two or three. Mm-hmm. And it's true that in a certain way, if a person had one tefillah that they had to say, they could take 10 minutes to say it, or 15, that one tefillah, when they were successful, might be very, very powerful. But there are so many other things that are happening in davening that we would then be throwing out the window for the sake of that one 10, 15-minute tefillah. And we don't have that scope of vision the way the Chachamim did to make that choice. However, and your point was a very good one, and it's a point well taken, a woman has more flexibility in this area than a man. And those things that you said that you'd like to do, you can do it. See, if I have to daven a whole davening, which I do, I'm going to have to find a way, you know, to apply this within the structure of the words that I'm obligated to say. I believe that it can be done. I'm working on it. I'm working on it. Yeah, Leif Avraham, please.
So, realistically,
yeah.
Seeking God, I mean, what does that really mean? A person is very limited. A human being, mm-hmm. the human mind is limited as to what it can seek, what it can find, what it can truly understand or perceive.
Right.
So, I think the answer to your question is, the only way that it's possible for us to even come close to having an understanding of God is through the tools that He gave us in which to seek Him, which is the Torah.
Yes.
So I think that's why we need that. We can't find God without the Torah, because you can't find God anyway. But if you're going to try, the only way to do it is to have the proper tools, and that is what Torah is.
He revealed Himself to us in the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
See, the Gemara says the first word of the Ten Commandments of the Aseres Hadibros, Anochi. Aleph Nun Kaf Yud. Ana is Aleph. I. Nafshi, my soul.
Mm-hmm.
Kesivis, I wrote it. Yehovis, I gave it. So Hashem is saying that He kaviyochol, so to speak, He put His soul into the Torah. Ana nafshi kesivis yehovis, I put my soul in the Torah and I gave it to you. Hashem doesn't have a soul, He's not a person. But the idea is that He let us know Him to the extent that we human beings can know Him by revealing Himself in the Torah. And that's your point, Aram. That's where He showed Himself to us. And that applies to really every facet of our life. We're trying to find Hashem in every facet of our life. A big part of Hasidus, and also the Sifrei Musar as well, is, okay, you're not doing a mitzvah, right? We're not davening, we're not learning, we're not involved in Shabbos. We're in our daily life. We're out there in the world. God is there too. Hashem isn't just present in the shul, in the Beis Midrash, and on Shabbos. Hashem is with us every single second of the day. So, touching on several of the comments that were made here tonight, very important ones, the idea is that He's everywhere. In an interaction with another person, Hashem is there. We're at the grocery store, Hashem is there. We're davening, Hashem is there. We're talking to our children, Hashem is there. Talking to a colleague, Hashem is there. Every single circumstance in life is a way to find Hashem, if we're open to it. And we try and take the wisdom of the Torah and let it flow into all facets of our life. And that's also part of the idea of creating the connection. We have to go into it with that awareness. Okay. Yes, please.
Anochi, the last
Yud. Yes.
What is the Yud?
Yehovah's. It's an Aramaic word. Yehovah's, right. I gave it. Yehovah's. It's
from the
Yeah. Yud Hey Vase.
Yud
Hey. The other thing about Yud Hey Vase. Yud Hey Vase. Yud Suf. Yehovah's. It's Aramaic. I gave it.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just in terms of knowing God.
Yeah.
In the beginning of Bereshit, we talk about Tzelem Elokim. So, a Tzelem, it's like Tzel, a shadow. And the shadow is an impression of ourselves. If we're walking on a sunny day and we see our Tzel, our shadow, it's not, it's an image of ourselves, but it isn't quite
not
like
us.
Looking in a mirror. So, Tzelem Elokim, to me, is that it's an opportunity to know a piece of God. Part of God, because Kamosh Katu B'Torah, like it's written, Nivreinu B'Tzelem, we were created. So it has its limitations, but there's a little window.
That little peak that we have. Now I would say it a little differently, although I agree in principle with what Pam is saying, that it's not a piece or a part of Him, because Hashem has no pieces and parts. But it is what He allowed us to understand. One way to say it, also from the Ramchal, is that the way He relates to the world is what He allowed us to know. His Hashgacha, His Hanhaga, His Midos, that's what He allowed us to know. Okay, everybody, terrific. I have a great week. Asher Koa, thank you for your excellent questions. And next week, with God's help, we will wrap up with Nesivo Shalom.
So, Rabbi, when are we going to go back to the Ramchal and the Maharal and all of that?
Well, this is a Hasidus semester.
Yeah. Okay.
This is all Hasidus. So. Those are not on the agenda this semester.
No, wait, this is...
You remember the...
I just
you got it?
It's happening remotely.
Okay.
Letting God in.
This is the contrast that there is with the Mithandim. Even if you go into regular schools, you have,
amongst the Hasidim.
No, well, I don't know, but. It's like
next
the name
class.
Of God.
Let's go. Let's go. We're going. You're younger than I am. Yes, think so.
I know what you're saying, but Hasidim are more involved in that. Yeah,
they would say it more. They would mention God.
Right.
Everywhere, every other sentence, every other, we don't. I mean, the other Jewish.
Yeah, we should.
And we should.
We should.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think this is what Hasidus is bringing in. I'm just wondering.
I turned around a second.
Why the Jews are so afraid in a way to mention that. Intrinsically.
I don't think it's a fear. I think it's more that we get very caught up in our mitzvos and our halachos.
Uh-huh.
And we get so involved in that that sometimes we fail to step back and say, oh, this is about God. I think that's what happens to us sometimes.
I mean, I know that it strikes me to not hear and speak. I mean, not hear, our leaders speak about God.
Yeah, it should be part of our vocabulary.
Right.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Was that Maimon that you read from tonight, that Shuki's brother who wrote that? Yaakov?
Yes. Shuki's brother compiled this sefer.
Awesome.
Yeah, Yaakov, your son.
Yeah,
he put it together. Yeah, he did a great job.
Awesome. I learned something from you next time they come down. Mm-hmm.
They were Belzer Hospitals. We went to the Nicholsberger Rebbe station on Friday night, which was wild. He was just beside himself, happy, just enjoyed it. So it was wonderful. Our rabbi is
pay two mortgages for a while because while you're we'll have a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
So does that sound like a plan or does that sound like a not realistic?
Are you talking about fixing up or demoing the house? I just want to make sure you're not.
No, fixing up.
Okay.
I asked Tony Goldberg, that's the guy I really use.
Mm-hmm.
He said we just